At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome into the best in paranormal programming. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. I'm excited to have our next guest with us today. You know, one of the things we like to talk about here on the program is UFOs and UAP. And we've got a guest today who has a documentary out there that talks about secret space UFOs, Apollo 1 through 11. That's the name of the documentary. It's the truth about our early Apollo missions. And I was riveted to this film. Because there's a lot of stuff out there that's been talked about, a lot of things that have been talked about out there about those missions, and about whether some of the astronauts that are both now either alive or passed on were willing to talk about some of that stuff and some of that evidence that's both hidden and very much out there, that there were things flying around following them and even in plain sight during those missions that NASA is not willing to talk about. Our guest today is director Darcy Weir. And that documentary came out actually on April 4th and is available right now. We'll tell you how to get a hold of it. Actually, there's a link in the description of this program. I want to play the trailer for you right now and give you a little taste of what you're in for today during today's program.
Yes. So, I mean, it makes sense that there are sightings here. Why wouldn't there be sightings out there? You know, I just, it's not my area of expertise. I look into the phenomenon, and if it leads me to an astronaut, great. And if not, you know, so I just know that what Faye Ann Potter told me about her brother, Buzz Aldrin, that they saw something on the way to the moon.
Well, we pulled most of these images from sources like the Apollo Lunar Surface Journal, which is actually drawing them from the scanned high-resolution NASA versions of all the handheld photography.
Accomplishing this was considerably less simple. It meant showing that a brand new spacecraft, far more complicated than its predecessors, would operate so well it could be trusted to take men well beyond near-Earth orbit.
We were that first crew that was going to get a chance to fly this vehicle and test this vehicle that was going to take human beings to the moon.
Let's say we know all of these implications, and let's say it's 1960 and we know some of these things, right? Well, you think of the world back then. The world of 1960, no way would that world be ready for some of the intellectual realities of what we think we know now.
Although it is presumed that the recordings were destroyed or lost, the transcriptions were made at NASA by the woman shown in this image and others.
Which we might get in the mainstream media, the fact that we're not alone sometime in the future. These congressional hearings in which experiencers are going to test it.
Let me tell you a little bit about our guest, Darcy Weir. He's a documentary filmmaker who has chosen to explore some of the most intriguing topics of discussion today, including UFOs, cryptids, and Bitcoin. He has completed over 15 feature-length documentaries all of which are available on Tubi TV and Amazon Prime. His goal is to make the world of UFOs more accessible to the general public by shedding light on the subject. We're going to shed some light today on that subject. I want to welcome into the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show, Darcy Weir. Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good afternoon, Tim. I'm good. How you doing?
Good, good, good. I got to tell you, I was excited to tackle this one and also Fast Walkers. I got a chance to sit down with both documentaries.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I watched both documentaries. Enjoyed both of them. So I'm going to tip my cap to you, sir, and tell you that I enjoyed both movies and want to get into it a little bit with you on UFOs today. First of all, I'm going to get a little off topic and then we'll work our way backwards. This week, the United States government is sitting down and talking a little bit more. AARO, A-A-R-O, is talking about how much they want to get into the weeds with UFO and UAP. I see a little bit of a smile. We're on Zoom together. Well, full disclosure for our audience. Mm-hmm. How much they want to get into the weeds with the general public about UAP. And I think it's going to come up in this as we're taping this, they're getting into these meetings. How much do you believe the U.S. government, now we are talking about the Apollo missions here today, how much do you truly believe they really want to get into this with the U.S. public and how much they really want to release based on some of the videos that we've seen over the last couple of years?
Well, yeah, I think anything that's going to come out of AARO's discoveries, A-A-R-O, the Advanced Anomaly Research Organization, I think, that was established within Congress. And we talk about that in Fast Walkers, actually. It's quite timely, all the research that I was doing in these two documentaries, you know, kind of looking at the historical stuff and then looking at what's coming and what's present with UFOs and space, right? Mm-hmm. I think they've already interviewed many different representatives that people in the UFO community are very familiar with. So Robert Salas, who was a Minuteman, you know, managing a nuclear missile silo that went down after a UFO was seen hovering over top of it and freaked out his personnel. Dr. Jacobs, who witnessed a dummy nuclear warhead being zapped out of the sky on a film that he shot when they were doing a missile test. And many others. I mean, apparently Chris Bartel from Skinwalker Ranch went in and gave his testimony. A lot of people are being called in to be interviewed by this office that wants some more, you know, insight. I think a lot of these individuals are not as studious as, say, you or I are mm-hmm. on this subject. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to get familiar with it by bringing in credible witnesses. And I think, you know, James Fox is in both these documentaries, and you'll notice he's very interested in the subject, but he's careful about what he's going to say and cover. And I think that's going to be the stance of the American government as well to the public. They're going to be very careful about what they have to say. But James, being different from working from the American government, being a real researcher that steeped his mind in this information, this phenomenon for, you know, decades now, he's worried that AARO's going to just lock up that information and not disseminate it to the public, just like so many other research organizations have done in the past, like Project Blue Book, mm-hmm. You know, or Project Grudge and so on and so forth. So there's always been an interest in UFOs within the military. Okay.
Yeah.
The Air Force has known about it. The Navy's known about it. Different branches of the military are in the know. And you even see right now the Space Force, you know, making some interesting announcements about UAP or UFOs. This is not by accident. This is probably by design because they want to get ahead of this issue. if we are trying, you look at what Gillibrand was announcing today, that they're kind of trying to identify if these are aerial threats.
Right.
Right. They right. want a bit more insight into that. And you wouldn't be talking about threat narratives unless you wanted to secure your skies and your space, you know, mm-hmm. above your continent, because outer space is the greatest theater of war in the future.
Correct.
You want to secure those two places by the utmost degree. And I think that's what they're kind of gearing up to do with the backdrop of things escalating with possibly Russia and China. So I think a little bit is going to be, you know, at the backdrop of this aggression with foreign adversaries. And then the other part of it is simply that people have had enough and they want to know, you know, are we being visited by craft that are not being run by some clandestine military industrial complex private organization that's been building it on behalf of the military and flying them around the skies, you know, the mm-hmm. black budget stuff. We want to know what's ours, what's theirs, and what's not ours or theirs, if that makes sense.
It makes complete sense. You know, Darcy, the conspiracy theory for the longest time, and this is what makes me wonder, and I'm going to tie this all together in kind of a weird bow, and then I want to get your thoughts on this. For the longest time, for as long as I can remember, and I'm a semi-old man, you know, early 50s, for the longest
time...
Young at heart, but old in body. for the longest time I can remember, especially in the days of In Search Of, in Leonard Nimoy, bringing us all the way to current day, I can remember the thought that there was two schools of thought here, and that is there's us common folk that wonder... about whether the government's always been in bed with aliens and that we've always been in bed with aliens and that we've reversed their technology, that we've had a working agreement with them, that there's us and them, and then there's the people that work with them, and that there's two classes here, okay? And we'll never know exactly what our government has worked out with aliens, but somewhere there's this cabal of people that have a working arrangement with them and will always be in the dark. Now, all of a sudden, it seems like we've been fooling ourselves. We've been telling ourselves these stories at night to make ourselves feel like, you know what? Big Brother's always been taking care of us and had some sort of control on this thing so that we can sleep at night. And then all of a sudden, just a few years ago, President Trump comes in and says, no, we're going to form Space Force because we need to secure ourselves from whatever it is that's out there. And we went, whoa, 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 wait a minute. We've always had a handle on this thing. Now, all of a sudden, the government opens things up and goes, well, we don't have a clue, do you? And all of a sudden, that blanket of security, that dark cabal that always had an agreement with these things from outer space, that always had been reversing technology, that had always been working with these aliens that were always going to come down and save our planet when we screwed it up, all of a sudden we don't know anything about them. Now, mm-hmm. I want to ask you this, Darcy, what's the real story here? Because it seems like we either do know about them mm-hmm. and we've been working with them, and this is just kind of glad-handing the American public, these meetings, Arrow and such, or we don't know about them. And we really should be, as so brilliantly put in The Walking Dead and in Negan and whatnot, we should be putting our shitting britches on. And we really should be scared for our lives at the fact that our government doesn't know a damn thing about what we're doing. And they're just as clueless as we are. And they're just hoping to God that we have the answers and they and we can inform them as to what it is we're looking at in the skies.
Sure. I mean, I think it's definitely a combination. You know, the government is used to focusing on the bread and circus of mainstream society. And this issue, UAP, UFOs, and the possibility that something's out there that's not ours, is something that the mainstream government has handled before. You know, the average senator has no idea what this is all about. You got guys like Tim Burchett and Marco Rubio who are actually interested because they probably have done a bit of research before they even, you know, were put to task with unveiling more about UAP in modern day, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, Tim Burchett has been analyzing this phenomenon for years. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
They're the exception to the rule. There are many, many, many senators throughout the United States that don't understand anything about this phenomenon. So they're being brought into this through Arrow. And I think there is validity to that. I think there is going to be some power to that so that this subject gets elevated. You know, mm-hmm. So we're actually, I think, in essence, we are actually at this turning point in our societies. We're at this really interesting turning point in time. We have so many things happening at the same time. You know, we discussed a little bit about like the world sort of war issue before, but we also have these economic issues that are kind of lingering. We've got digital finance being changed with cryptocurrencies. We have the UAP issue being brought into the mainstream in politics. And therefore, this could have a trickle down and being a very mainstream thing in our mainstream news going forward. So you're going to be having your average person who's never been really into this and thought all of this was just mostly science fiction before being slightly steeped in this knowledge going forward if this becomes a mainstream political issue. So I think there is validity in that. But yes, I do agree that there is mountains of evidence that's been sitting in classified, you know, vaults within the military. Whether that's the Navy, the Air Force, the DIA, the CIA, the FBI, they all have a hand in covering this up over the decades that have passed. And they're going to have to be a bit more transparent about that information. And I think it's going to be an information war for everybody to, you know, do their due diligence and say, okay, we have this now in the mainstream, but can we peel some layers back here and can you give us some more transparency on what you really have in those vaults? Why is it that we only get one frame from a Mosul orb video? Why do we only get a few seconds of a Tic Tac video? We want the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Give us the whole thing. We've got the testimony from the pilots. We've got testimony from government insiders. Give us the whole thing. We can digest this. We can understand it. We deserve it.
Let me peel this back to the subject at hand, which is your documentary. Why not take Senator Burchett? Why not take Senator Rubio and say, hey, guys, let's sit down and watch this movie, Secret Space UFOs Apollo 1 through 11. Let's take it back to the beginning. Let's take it back to the space program. Let's take it back to going to the moon. And show them this movie, show them that, hey, when we went to the moon, NASA was editing a lot of what these guys could say. When you look at a lot of the footage of these guys on the moon, you can see things in the background. You can see these anomalies in the background. You can see these things when they're looking out the window of their spacecraft. You can see things flying between the Earth and the window that they're looking out of. Why don't we present the evidence that we already have from 40, 50 years ago and say, why don't we start with this first and work our way to now and finally come clean with what happened during these Apollo missions?
You know, I was talking to Avi Loeb not too long ago, and he was professing that Project Galileo is your best chance to find UAP concrete evidence because it's all new stuff. It's going to be recorded on instrumentation that's monitored by credible scientists, yada, yada, yada.
Okay.
And I implore his effort. I think that's a really great thing that he's doing. However, he did discount at the same time that there's a plethora of evidence in the past. He said, all of that stuff is locked up. We're never going to get full transparency from the military on those. So it's better to move on and capture new evidence. I disagree. That's why I'm making documentaries like that, because I want to compile all of these really strange anomalies that have happened. And in this case, in space, you know, for Apollo 1 to 11 and Fast Walkers, it's a blast from the past and then a blast from the present in terms of space activity and really strange UFOs being recorded on space missions with NASA space cameras that are not tampered with. This is not CGI.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
To me, they're as good as the Go Fast Gimbal or Tic Tac UFO videos because it's being recorded on, you know, those are being recorded on military craft that are using gun cameras that are high tech, recording in a different light spectrum from the human eye can even notice.
Mm-hmm.
Really high quality equipment. And NASA has been using that sort of equipment for decades as well.
Yes.
You know, they were the ones that, that's the thing about NASA. They're always, you know, pioneering the testing of certain new technologies, and then that gets trickled down into society, right?
Yes.
And FLIR and far light ultraviolet cameras, which I exhibit in the Fast Walkers documentary, really compiles so many of these weird events that we've seen in space history recently, right? And it's the past. That's the problem. It's the past. And I think NASA has a classification program that they follow, and they, with regards to safeguarding information from the public, because they are a scientific apparatus that operates on behalf of whoever, NSA, Air Force, Navy, whoever has an interest, especially during the STS missions, they were putting up NSA satellites. They were putting up Air Force or Navy sort of instrumentation into space. So whenever you've got missions like that, they're highly classified because it has to do with protecting the country, our military interests. And therefore, I'm sure some of that activity that happens up there, whether that's UFOs that are being captured that are ours or from off world, they're both, you know, equally anomalous, but still they would remain classified. And I think that's the problem. I think NASA, you know, recently has set up that UFO research group,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
The NASA administrator Nelson, his first name is escaping me, Ben Nelson. Yeah. He's adamant that UFOs are real.
Okay.
And he was coming forward and talking about the Tic Tac video and speaking to the pilots that chased it. So this is a guy that was on the STS missions during the 2000s, the 90s and stuff like that. Right. So mm-hmm. I think he knows what's going on out there. Right. And, I think NASA is going to be a scientific administration, you know, which is the authority, in space science. They're going to be using that research group to somewhat bring transparency in the present public time that there is some kind of UFO activity that's, you know, peculiar, not ours.
You know, you bring up an interesting point, and that is a lot of the a lot of the cameras that are being used now were being used back when, say, the space shuttle Atlantis was up there, and they were using a lot of the same technology that, say, a documentary crew could use now. And in fact, I know of one documentary crew, and I can't remember the name of the documentary off the top of my head, but we had them here on this show. They were shooting off the coast of California, off of Catalina. Whoop, I'm sorry, I can't hear you there.
That was probably Tear in the Sky by Caroline Corey.
Yes, Tear in the Sky, that's right. Yep,
yeah.
Caroline
Corey. She's a friend of mine. She's really nice. And yeah, I think you have civilian researchers using a lot of this technology too, for sure.
Yep, and that documentary was amazing. That, I mean, just to see that Tic Tac video and the fleet that came down out of the sky was mind-boggling. And the equipment that they used in that documentary is, I think you could argue here, honestly, Darcy, is no different than most of the equipment that was used, say, on the space shuttle Atlantis. Would you argue that it's pretty much the same equipment?
Pretty much the same, except the difference would be that hundreds of thousands of dollars in government spend goes into each camera.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about scientists that are designing a camera from the ground up that is completely shielded from the extreme temperature, like cold temperatures of space, deep space. And the unfiltered sun, because that sun, you know, astronauts talk about not having their shade visor down when the sun spins around, when they spin around and they're doing a moonwalk, not a moonwalk, but an EVA, an extra vehicular activity outside of the ISS or something, repairing something or doing a test, and they get so blinded, their eyes are almost like burnt out of their skulls because it's unfiltered light.
Right. Yep.
So these cameras have to withstand that type of thing. But then on top of that, they're shooting in a light spectrum, far light, ultraviolet, not a FLIR, but like a FLUV camera, so to speak, which was carefully designed. And they actually nicknamed it the glow camera. I don't know if you caught that in Fast Walkers, but they announced it as a glow camera that they have in their payload bay, right? So why are they even recording in that light spectrum unless they're looking for something that would be difficult to pick up with the human eye?
Yes.
And that's why UFO researchers for many years have been recording in different light spectrums on Earth, because they're looking for something that may be a little bit trickier to identify without that advantage. And, you know, whether that's a UFO that's kind of like hovering in the clouds or almost camouflaged, so to speak, we hear about that very often.
Yep.
I think that sort of phenomenon also takes place out in space.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And to me, it seems, as you put it, it's quite fishy. Why would you send up a space shuttle at that time with all those cameras if you're fishing and you're not looking to catch something? And and as you pointed out, Caroline Corey took an entire group out there with a more scaled down version of that type of equipment, but still spent a lot of money on equipment, but went out there and essentially caught the same thing here on Earth. So, you know, the fact of the matter is the cat's out of the bag.
I think it's safe to say.
Yeah.
And I think what we're going through right now in terms of Congress and NASA coming, you know, to the forefront and leading this sort of campaign to bring about some kind of form of disclosure to the public, that's all PR. It's just a way to show that they're actually doing something in the public eye when they've always been doing something in the private eye.
And I guess that's what frustrates me is why not someone like Senator Rubio doesn't come forward and say, you know what, I saw this movie, why don't we just go get Dr. Richard Dolan, who's a fountain of information, sit him down and say, go ahead and spew, you know, sit down in this meeting, bring as much information as you can, line me up. Talk to me about satellites that have picked up, you know, hundreds of craft coming into our airspace that were designed to pick out these anomalies, and tell me about how it's happened hundreds of times over decades. Tell me about the technology that's already out there to detect this stuff, and tell me about why we're missing why we're dropping the ball on this, why we're missing all this stuff, and how we can improve it so that we can make our public more secure.
I think maybe there will be some of that. Maybe there will be.
I'm hoping
we're going to have to see how it plays out, you know?
Yeah, I'm hoping so. When we come back, let's talk about the documentary itself. Again, it's a compelling documentary, and I want to talk about the moon itself, because it seems like right now, Darcy, we're in another race to get back up to the moon. Yep. I'm going to ask you this question when we come back. Should we be in such a rush to get back up there? There was a story that came out actually this week that China is talking about building, of all things, moon huts up on the moon. I'll tell you a little bit about that story when we come back, Darcy. It seems odd because it seems like there's already structures on the moon. We'll talk about that when we come back, about what the Apollo astronauts found up there, what they might have and might not have found up there. When we come back, we'll talk about what may be up there already, and we'll talk a little bit about the moon itself and whether it's a good idea to go back to the moon. We'll talk about that when we come back. Our guest is Darcy Weir. He's a director and filmmaker of Secret Space, UFOs, Apollo 1 through 11. We have a link to it in the description of this program. I want you to go check this out, folks. It is a compelling documentary about what happened up there on the moon in the Apollo missions, and whether there is more going on the moon than what we know. It's so compelling, folks. I want you guys to go check this out. But first, I want to bring in Beer City Bruiser. I want to talk to you a little bit about some stuff we have going on right here on the show.
Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Right now, get a free select tool when you buy the Craftsman V20 2-Pack Battery Kit. Whether it's the backyard, the bathroom, or beyond, Craftsman has the tools to help you power through and get the project done right. Because DIYing is unpredictable, but your tools shouldn't be. Shop Craftsman at Lowe's today. Valid through 7/9 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. Maximum initial battery voltage measured without a workload is 20 volts. Nominal voltage is 18.
Folks, when we come back, I want to talk to you a little bit about the documentary Secret Space UFOs Apollo 1 through 11. We're going to talk about the truth about our early Apollo missions, what was up on the moon, and whether there were secret structures on the moon, whether there were aliens on the moon, and whether our Apollo astronauts saw more than what they were saying on the moon. Were they coached by NASA to say specific things on the moon? We'll talk to director Darcy Weir when we come back on the best in paranormal programming. This is Darkness Radio.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Welcome back to the best in paranormal programming. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. Our guest is director Darcy Weir, who has a movie out right now called Secret Space UFOs, Apollo 1 through 11, The Truth About Our Early Apollo Missions. We're going to talk a little bit now about the actual moon itself, you know, from the early days of when they thought it was made out of green cheese to some people thinking it's a diosphere, to other people thinking that there really are just things that are using the moon as a base. Darcy, I've got to ask you right off the bat, what do you think is on the moon, and do you think it's actually being used by other species for something either nefarious or innocent?
You know, I couldn't say for sure, but I would say the anomalies that are present from Apollo 8 and beyond, because really, we didn't get to see the far side of the moon, the dark side of the moon, until Apollo 8, mm-hmm. Apollo 9, Apollo 10. This is where the astronauts were trying to prove that they could revolve that NASA Apollo space capsule, that brand newly designed capsule, around the backside of the moon and then come back to Earth. So they did that a few times, and then Apollo 11, they landed. And, you know, in Apollo 8, they started commenting on a strange noise they could hear on the far side of the moon, almost like music, right? They didn't call it music in Apollo 8, but Apollo 10 later on, they really did mention it as sounding like this strange space music. And they only noticed it when they were on the far side of the moon. It's been deeply part of our NASA space mission lore that the astronauts have seen, possibly recovered things from the lunar surface that were there previous to them arriving. And what that stuff was, I mean, even when we look at Carl Wolf's testimony, who was present at an NSA base that was monitoring the information coming from the lunar orbiter missions. These were the satellites sent to take high-res still images and build them in a mosaic to build the maps of the moon. This is where Carl Wolf was brought into a NSA facility, top secret, facility that was operating and bringing in these images that were being beamed back from that satellite mission. And they found bases on the moon, you know, and everybody in the base inside of the NSA facility were spooked about it. Mm-hmm. And an airman was telling him and showing him those photos where they could see massive structures, you know, things that look like dishes and massive building type structures. This is back in 1960, you know, 1961, that those years before we even put man on the moon in 1969. And then we hear about astronauts in the DSEA tapes, the sort of black box flight recorders, mentioning structures they're seeing, lights down on the lunar surface, and then that eerie music that only emanated on the far side of the moon. I think that, and some actually amateur telescope operators that are astronomy buffs who've been shooting the moon from Earth here have been finding strange structures and UFOs floating around the lunar surface in recent times.
Okay.
And that's, you know, I'd love to make that documentary, compile all that footage and testimony of just average Joes like you and I finding yeah. strange stuff on the moon with our high quality optics that we can set up here on the planet. So I think there's bases that are not ours up there, or structures that are relic from maybe an ancient civilization. I can't say that anything's operating there for sure because I don't have any of that data. But, you know, from the descriptions of what astronaut pilots were seeing during the Apollo days, if there's lights being emitted, there's something currently active, you know,
yeah.
In recent decades. And then the structures sometimes look blown apart and destroyed. You know, in some of the photos Mike Barra goes over, you might have noticed in this documentary, he really breaks down some interesting structures that are present in the Apollo 10, Apollo 11 missions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, strange structures that are even hovering above the moon's surface that seem to be suspended there by scaffolding or lines and stuff like that. Strange things that you would never even think to consider when you think about the moon, but maybe there's lots of structuring up there, lots of megalithic things that the public just doesn't know about. And I really hope that if these Artemis missions are being carried out and we are going back to the moon and this new space race that's occurring between China and the United States and, you know, even the Indian Space Agency, all these different countries want to get to the moon. Why?
Yeah. Well,
it's possible that they know something's there and they want to recover it or see it, research it. And the United States in the public eye with Artemis wants to show that they have space supremacy and that they're going to be active on the moon before others. Right. So I think there's going to be this rush to build a new base on the moon, which will then be the precursor to sending us in the public eye to Mars and possibly trying to have settlers there, you know, with the Starlink, you know, SpaceX's mission to Mars endeavor is quite relevant now. You know, they want to get out there and I want to get out there too. It would be great.
So Darcy, I would ask you this. I mean, other than just the thrill of having been to a different planet than one of ours, why go to a planet that's already been explored and one that potentially, I mean, it's a dead planet. It's not one that would be settled easily. I mean, this is one that you'd basically have to terraform, one that you would really have to put a lot of work in order to make it livable. I mean, what is the thrill of trying to conquer a planet that can't sustain life?
I think it's just the development of mankind, our ability to fan out and populate other planets within our solar system is the precursor to us being maybe galactic civilization, you know, to going to another star. Mm-hmm. And we need to prove that we can live on another planetoid in our solar system before we can do anything like that. And every time we've, you know, if you look at the Apollo 1 to 11 and the Fast Walker missions, a lot of scientific instrumentation and a lot of groundbreaking tests are being done in space, right?
True.
The public doesn't, not a lot of people in the public pay attention to that. A lot of people just ignore it and watch sports and, you know, famous TV shows and movies and, you know, superhero shows and all the fantasy stuff you can steep yourself with. But NASA has been doing some incredible stuff in space. And I think it's also a place to legitimize certain technologies. So if we do go to another planetoid, we might be using a different type of technology eventually to get there. Maybe we won't be using fossil fuel rockets for the long duration. Maybe there's going to be an announcement that we're going to be using other things to populate different moons and planetoids in the public eye.
What do you think about the announcement that they came up with a new energy source, the laser fusion source, which was basically taking, and they were talking about being able to power cities with it, which was, I think, the overall reason of it, but being able to take lasers and being able to use it in a fusion like sense in order to power a city. Mm-hmm. But when you think of a combustion engine, being able to use that laser and turning it into fusion, then using it in an engine where it's a fusion engine, not a combustible engine, mm-hmm. being able to have that kind of a power and then using it in a different type of engine where you could basically traverse the universe is a whole different thing. Now you're talking about being able to make an engine that could potentially, you could use for time travel, or you could use it to be able to travel at light speed, which is something we've never thought of before. Is that some sort of an option?
Sure. I'm sure it is. That's an exciting breakthrough. You know, it's a small breakthrough right now because they have to do a lot of R&D to make it, you know, city scale, factory use mm-hmm. for powering everything. But it's important that that's being announced because it's saying like, hey, there's maybe we're going to be getting off a bit of this oil and gas fossil fuel technology that's been haunting the planet for so long. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it would be either a technology that would be used for very important commercial aspects. So like you said, powering a city, or for space travel. I don't think they would allow that technology to be put into civilian use, sort of like running a car or something like that.
Yeah, because
they don't want you to take that technology and turn weaponize it or something in your garage.
True.
In my opinion, I think it would always stay, it would almost stay as a technology that was protected by the government and the military.
I could see that. I could see that. We were talking about going to the moon and what is it that possibly could be there on the moon that we would seek out. I had mentioned to you that China is planning to kick off work on a moon base using bricks made of lunar soil within the next 5 years. I have to ask you whether this is a good idea or not, based on the fact that in your documentary, we're talking about the fact that there are structures already on the moon. Is China assuming that there's nothing on the moon, that it's truly just craters and dust?
I think China, for example, Russia has known about things in space for just as long as the United States. They have a very good intelligence program, and they've been part of the ISS for many years until that cooperation is kind of dissolved in recent times with the invasion of Ukraine. But I think if you look at the important work that Jeff Challenger did, when, you know, you watched the Fast Walkers documentary, this was a disabled man that was recording anomalies during the STS space missions that were supplying and fueling the construction of the ISS, the International Space Station, and just above our planet. He was noticing all these anomalies, and he noticed that Russia, one of their engineers on live television, announced that NASA has a 20-second video feed delay. And that's important. That means that NASA actively, with their operators that are using the cameras and directing things from the ground, they're trying to quickly, you know, change our view from the planet within 20 seconds.
Yeah.
They want to control that information, right? Why would you need a video feed delay unless you needed to prevent people from seeing certain things? That's why we use it in the commercial television industry, right?
Yep.
60-second delays and such.
Yep.
They're able to edit things.
Mm-hmm.
So if Russia knew about a video feed delay, I think they know about structures on the moon, although they were the ones that also propagandized that we never went to the moon in the first place, right? They said that they did all their mathematics and they did their rocket testing when they were doing their space missions and sending cosmonauts into space, into Earth orbit. They were saying that they knew they didn't have the technology, that Apollo missions didn't have the technology to put man on the moon. So they started that whole rumor, and I think it was just propaganda, you know, sour grapes, because the USSR was trying to defeat the United States. It's economically,
yeah, space and, race,
and in the space race, right?
Yep.
People still glom on to that rumor, though, which is unfortunate. And yeah, I think they do know full well that there's stuff up there, and that China's going to find stuff up there, and they're also part of keeping that stuff from the public, because China doesn't want, just as the United States or Russia doesn't want everybody in their society to be fully informed. That's just a falsehood of reality, right? You don't want all 1 billion people to be as well informed as the president or somebody of high economic stature and importance in sort of a government role, right?
Yeah.
You want people to be consumers. You want people to be actively, almost like economic robots providing for the economy and being cooperative. If you fully inform the public, you might be breaking down that effort.
Okay.
You know, you might be breaking, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So I think China would also, especially with their tightness to Russia, know about space secrets, and they want to get on the moon because they want to have a piece of the pie militarily and economically that the United States eventually is going to have. Making lunar soil bricks, though, to, you know, I hope they have a lot of barriers and insulation, because there is helium-3 and all kinds of strange things in that soil that are radioactive, I think. So I don't think you would want to just have a brick wall made of that stuff. But anyways.
Well, the way they describe it, there's a Ding Lai-Yun is the scientist from Huazheng University of Science and Technology. He told state-run news outlet China Science Daily during a conference that he helped construct an egg-shaped habitat prototype, which is made up of 3D-printed bricks made from lunar soil. Ding's team had a robot called Chinese Super Mason lay these bricks on top of each other. The idea is to reduce the amount of material needed to be sent from Earth while making the construction process as straightforward as possible. SCMP, Ding and his team are hoping to construct the first bricks on the surface of the moon in just 5 years' time as part of the country's Chang'e 8 mission. Long before then, the country's space program is planning the first ever sample return mission to the moon's far less studied far side. That mission, dubbed Chang'e 6, is a collaboration with French scientists, which is interesting in itself, according to the state-owned news outlet China Daily, and is scheduled to kick off as soon as 2025. To me, this seems like they're making different structures, but they're not saying why they're making these structures. Obviously, they're not livable structures. I mean, they're habitats, but
you got to have something within that, yeah.
Yeah, there's something within those habitats, whether they're livable, whether they're storage, whether they're, I mean, it's curious as to why you would want something semi-permanent on the moon, but they contain lunar materials.
Yeah. I think it's just, you build with what you've got, right? They're not going to fly, heavy amounts of, building materials to the moon when they can just use what they've got, but they're going to have to figure out a way to really isolate themselves from space radiation and such, you know.
Yeah.
There's a reason why the Apollo astronauts wore such thick, you know, Kevlar and lead and all of these different layers laden in their suits to prevent them from being exposed to the extremes of space.
Yeah, it's interesting stuff. The fact that this story came out, and it came out just within the last few days. Interesting indeed. And I wonder how the U.S. answers that. And you wonder about international rights in the moon. I mean, even though we were the first up there, we by all means don't have any rights to the moon. No country, I think, has any rights to the moon, but it brings a whole new meaning to the space race and what now different countries will do and what they'll try to lay claim to in the name of science. And the fact the French are working with the Chinese is interesting in itself.
Well, I think Macron recently announced that they would be willing to take the Chinese or the new BRICS nations established currency instead of the US dollar.
Yeah. Yep.
So parts of Europe are opening up to the West. They're opening up to China and Russia. Mm-hmm. So that's not good for the United States. It's
no, not at all.
It seems that, you know, those European countries are starting to figure out who would be a better ally for them in the coming years. And I guess they've made their decision when it comes to space and possible energy currency solutions.
True. And they're figuring out as well that there aren't as many innovative things, I guess, coming out of America anymore. And it just means we need to start getting more innovative.
Exactly.
That's for sure.
We have to be competitive.
That's right. That's right. When it comes to the movie, again, I want to tackle something that's very interesting without giving away too much about the movie. And that is what it is exactly that the astronauts up there were willing to give away in the years after they were up on the moon. I'm not going to name any names here, Darcy, but it's funny that we talk about coaching. We talk about what exactly NASA was willing to let them do and say. And there's some moments in the movie which are very interesting in that they admit that NASA told them there was only so much they could say. And that they were heavily, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't want to say coached, but they were told there were only certain things they could say, especially when they were in communique back and forth with mission control.
Yeah, I'll name a name. I mean,
yeah, go ahead.
If you look at the story of James Fox and Buzz Aldrin and how essentially James Fox borrowed a whole bunch of money. He was supposed to go meet with Buzz Aldrin and get the goods on his UFO experiences, mm-hmm. not just one, but a UFO experience possibly on Earth as well as in space that haunted him. But then essentially James Fox ghosted him. Or sorry, not James Fox ghosted him. Buzz Aldrin ghosted James Fox and said, I'm not going to talk about it because it's going to jeopardize my ability to raise money for a civilian program to launch rich civilians into space. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. That's really disconcerting because that's like a testimonial that I trust and that I think is important to the public to know that there are astronauts out there that have had these experiences that are so anomalous, they would be, you know, earth shattering to the general public to know that something that was not ours, you know, out there has freaked out our astronauts and kind of stalked them and so on and so forth. Yet the public doesn't know because those astronauts will not come forward about it for economic reasons, possibly for, threat reasons. You know, I believe if NASA follows the same classifications and safeguarding information protocols that many of the military agencies or intelligence agencies follow, then those astronauts have to fall in line and they have to be very careful about what they say. Some astronauts have come forward though and said certain things, and you know, Edgar Mitchell, Apollo 14 astronaut, is very vocal about the UFO subject and was, you know, very in the know about what was going on in terms of keeping that information from the public. And we're possibly, hopefully, going to see other astronauts come forward in the future to say more. I think we need a new Edgar Mitchell. We need somebody that's like the NASA administrator that just says there's something here. And I think it is important that Mr. Nelson is taking this seriously.
In closing, Darcy, let me ask you this question. Do you believe that there's any of the Apollo mission information or any of the information that's been used in the movie that you produced here that will be used to advance the agenda of the Aero meetings that are going on either right now or some of the meetings in the future?
I doubt it. I think NASA's research group on UAPs are going to be looking at new data and current data. They're not going to be looking into their vaults of anomalies. You know, That's for researchers like ourselves to kind of like bring to the public if possible. Maybe they'll comment on it, but all these years, if you look at the testimony that was provided in Secret Space UFOs Fast Walkers, when Dr. Jack Kasher went to NASA and said, you know, what was this object in this video, or news reporters go to NASA and say, what happened with this object that was showed up in this STS mission, they always just say it's space ice or debris. But we both know that space ice and debris doesn't, stop on a dime, reverse in the opposite direction, operate with intelligence,
Okay. Darcy Weir, I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tim. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, and I hope you have a great week.
Thank you. You as well. Secret Space UFOs, Apollo 1 through 11, The Truth About Our Early Apollo Missions, is available right now. It got released on April 4th, and I encourage you folks to go watch that movie. There's some stuff in there that will absolutely astound you. It'll blow you away. And we'll have you questioning, did those astronauts actually see structures on the moon? Did they see UFO, why they were up there? And were they censored by our American government? And will we ever learn the truth about what it was they saw up there? Again, Darcy Weir has been our guest today on Darkness Radio. Want to remind you guys to go out there, have a good weekend, and take care of yourself and each other. Want to say happy 420 to you guys who are out there celebrating it again. Stay safe. And by the way, don't go out there and drive impaired. If you're going to celebrate, stay at home this weekend and don't hurt anybody while you're out there. Again, take care of yourself and each other. Do somebody a favor this weekend. Go out there and help somebody who's in need. They may just need $5. They may need something, and they may need a favor around the house. They may need, you may have a neighbor who's impaired in some way. Maybe they've got a physical disability that they may need help around the house. Maybe they need some yard work done. Maybe somebody out there who may need help with grocery shopping or the like. Go out there and help somebody this weekend. Leave the world a little bit better than what you found it this weekend. Just a little bit of advice from your buddies here at Darkness Radio. Again, check out darknessradioshow.com. Hey, we need some parashare stories out there. So darknessradioshow.com. Click on that blue button on the right-hand side. Leave us a voice note if you care to leave your parashare story that way. Otherwise, send us an email, tim@darknessradio.com. We'd like to share your story with our audience, whether you've had an experience with a ghost, whether you've had a cryptid experience or an alien experience. We'd like to hear about that as well. Again, tim@darknessradio.com or go to darknessradioshow.com. Click on that blue button. Leave us a 2-minute voice note. If 2 minutes isn't long enough for your story, go ahead and click on that blue button again. I'll stitch those voice notes together. We'll play it here on the show. And if you'd like us to, we'll weigh in on your story. So there you go. Have a good weekend, everybody. For Beer City Bruiser, for Mally Fox, and for Jessica Freeberg, I'm Tim Dennis. We'll see you next week for another great week of Darkness Radio. Again, we want to thank our sponsor, HelloFresh. If you'd like to get in on the deal with HelloFresh, it's simple. Go to HelloFresh.com/darkness50, and when you get to checkout, put in the code Darkness50 to save 50% off your order, plus get your first box shipped free. Again, we want to thank HelloFresh for sponsoring today's program. We'll see you next week, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to the best in paranormal programming. This has been Darkness Radio.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.